This hour, we'll take your phone calls as we talk about the extra dimensionals, about alien visitations. John D'Souza with us on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast. John D'Souza with us, of course, his book, The Extra Dimensionals. John, making that assumption people are being abducted, taken against their will, what's going on here? What's happening?
Well, you know, what I was alluding to earlier was that studying the first big classic case of globally known human abduction, which was Betty and Barney Hill,
right.
It tells us a lot, because the patterns established in that case have held up since then in so many other cases. And one of the shocking conclusions I've come to in studying so many cases in this area, just with a pure investigator's lens, regardless of what people want to be true, I mean, just following the investigation wherever it leads, the conclusion I've come to is that human alien abduction is largely a fraud, and not in the way that person would expect. So I have to explain what I mean by that.
Yes.
It's basically there's about 8 or 9 steps to a human alien visitor abduction. And first one is the stalking phase, the stalking step. There's some sort of UFO plasma vehicle that will be stalking the human targets in a car, in a home, in something. Then it'll be the chase. Then there will be the acquiring, the acquisition of the human subjects. Then there is the execution of a plan for a human abduction. There's complete command and control over the humans throughout the episode. There's stoppage of clocks, watches, technology, almost as if time itself was being paused. Then there's the use of some kind of medical facilities, or something that seems like medical facilities, and the use of technology is just beyond human. There's often the complete lack of empathy or care for the subject's pain or discomfort. There's usually some sort of telepathic communication with the subjects in a limited fashion, even if it's just calm down, you know, this is a peaceful procedure, you know, just relax, something short and curt like that. Then there's the final goal, the collection of various human samples, human tissue, blood, sperm, ova, many varieties of human material. And here's why I say the whole thing's a fraud. It's because the only step here that matters, the only step they really want to get to is the final one, the collection of various samples, the human tissue, the blood, the sperm, ova, and any variety of human material. That's the only step that really matters. And with their level of technology, what they have, all these other steps are just theater. They're unnecessary. They don't need to do these other steps. But they are doing them, and they're doing them consistently. So then the question becomes, why? What's the reason? And I believe, you know, to me it seems obvious that with their technology, they could very easily just show up somewhere, stopping time or pausing time, however you want to phrase it, and just show up somewhere where a lot of humans are gathered and collect as much human material as they want and disappear, and nobody would be the wiser. They could very easily do that. So why go through all these other steps? Why create that narrative? And that's the reason why. It's because it is a narrative. The conclusion I've come to is that it's a theater that they are trying to build. It's a narrative that they are going to draw on later when all of this approaches its crescendo, when it comes to its final climax. And then they can reach back and point to this theater and say, this is why we did this. This is why we built up this narrative.
Did you have to wrestle at all with your belief systems, John?
Did I? Somewhat, because, you know, I've always been a believer in God and creator force of some kind. But, you know, as my viewpoint became more and more cosmic, you know, then I come to the conclusion that if you believe in God, then God is God of all, including if there's varieties of other alien creatures as well. So, yeah, there's been some reconciliation of my viewpoints, because as you get deeper into these cases, you can't deny the authenticity of somebody like a Betty and Barney Hill. You know, their interviews are still available. They're a little disconcerting because they're black and white, but they're still available on public databases today. You can actually watch Betty and Barney Hill talking about their experiences and seeing their body language, how they move, the inflection in their voices, you can see the pain in their voices. They're not somebody out to make a buck, not somebody out to put something over on somebody. These were people in real emotional conflict, and anybody can see it. Even today, you can still see their interviews. So it's no matter what a person's belief system is, the authenticity in a lot of these cases. Travis Walton has, despite enormous pressure, he has held to the truth of what he has said for over 40 years now, every single detail, along with other witnesses as well. I mean, this, you know, in a court of law, you can't have a time machine. You have to prove whether somebody's telling the truth, like, right there in that moment. But if you could, a better indicia of truthfulness and authenticity would be if you could just stick with that witness for 40 years and just see that they don't change a detail of their story for 40 years, or like in the case of Betty and Barney Hill, until the day they die. They maintained against great cultural pressure to recant, to change their story, to say something different, even offers of money to recant and do the same. That's the sort of thing that always is encountered by these witnesses and by these people. And that proves their authenticity to a large extent in a way that a courtroom can't.
All right, let's go to the calls now. They're lining up here for you. Let us go to Martina on the Big Island in Hawaii. Hello, Martina. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi there.
So glad to talk to you guys.
Great.
This is just so exciting because I agree 100% with everything he's saying. I feel like I live in this multidimensional doorway, and to hear somebody actually speak of that again, it makes my heart feel a little bit better. I've seen multiple cloud vehicles and had telepathic communication with them, and I agree 100% with God is the God of all. And all my experiences have been that I don't know who these beings are, but they've all been with kindness, love, healing, and curious contact. But I have a question that I've seen these two beings that I've spoken with people and nobody has ever seen them or I don't know if anybody has heard of them. So I wanted to share that maybe John would recognize these beings. I've only seen them twice. The first time was a few years ago. We had this giant, like one of those mystery booms out here on this island in the Puna district. And that night we went to the ocean, and it looked like these beings are utilizing the living things on this planet. They care about this planet. They care deeply about this planet. I'm sure there's beings that don't, but the ones that honor free will, they care. They seem to utilize the trees, and as large as the trees are, they look like if you were to hold up like a large beach towel, a rectangular shape, and multiple of them in kind of a various colors of gray, very filmy, but they were exiting. The best way I could say is they utilized the life force of the tree to come into the third dimension, or at least to be seen, and they looked really mad. Not at me personally, but whatever was just done that caused the booms. And I could feel them. And the people I was with didn't necessarily see them, but I think they could feel them. We just got up and left, not for fear for ourselves, but they like angry soldiers, like whatever would just happened under the earth somebody exploded something very large in the ocean that caused the tidal to...
Well, ironically, John is working on another book that has to do with voices. So there are strange things going on here, John.
Absolutely. The book is called The Clear Hearers, about clairaudience. But itself, I wanted to ask the young lady if she got any names or titles on those. It sounds to me like earth spirits. That's what they sound like. But I guess she didn't, because she would have said if she had.
The voices that have spoken, that have been clear, have said, have no fear. You'll see things you don't understand, but have no fear. You'll see things you've never seen before, but have no fear. Every contact with them has always been to not have fear.
So what's your take on that, John?
Well, there's no more positive message than that. That pretty much identifies those entities that she came into contact with as being absolutely positive entities of light, because opposite entities that are evil and that are bad always look to create fear and loathing. And so, and these sound more like some sort of earth spirits, or which are also multidimensional. One of the big secrets of extra-dimensionality is that under a lot of philosophy, Fortean-type thinking, extra-dimensionality can apply to all paranormal phenomena, and it would explain a lot of things. And we're talking even Bigfoot or crypto-terrestrial creatures. It would explain a whole lot, even super-physical phenomena that somehow just disappears at just the right moment. And those earth spirits also sound like they are themselves extra dimensional as well. So that's fascinating stuff, because you're talking about creatures that use portals to get here, and are here for a short time and then go back. And yeah, they're looking for connection with human beings. And sometimes they find that connection through negative behavior, but other times they find it through positive behavior, like these creatures had with the people on that beach that night.
Let's go to Ronald, truck driving in Wyoming. Ronald, thank you. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on. Sure. I have a question for the author.
Okay.
I've heard a lot of stories over the years about aliens, and I'm not a skeptic. I'm willing to believe that they exist, and anyone who has their stories and what they think and what they believe, I'm fine with them believing that, and I want them to continue to share their stories and, you know, do their thing. But what physical evidence is there that any of this is real? There's got to be something. Do you have any evidence at all?
I love that question. And let me put it to you this way. If something is non-physical in nature, for most of its existence, let's say 99% of its existence is non-physical, then for that 1% that it becomes temporarily physical, it will tend to not leave anything behind in the physical materium that it's coming to. That's really the conundrum that we face with a lot of paranormal phenomena. And so men in white lab coats will run around looking for reproducible results and something they can stuff into a test tube. And, journalists will look for something they can put in print and show in a picture. And those things have been produced in the past. We have pictures from the night of the, for instance, the battle over Los Angeles. There's pictures of those vehicles up there in the sky.
Yeah, whatever they were.
Whatever they were, yeah, they are. And, and there were lots of audio recordings, and some people say video recordings even, at Rendlesham Forest, made not just by Colonel Halt, but by others in this troop as well. And those, of course, disappeared, because that was in the control of people who don't want us to see what exactly is going on. So the question about proof is always legitimate, but it's kind of like asking for a saltwater fish to survive in fresh water. That's not the medium that it exists in. It's not what it's meant for. And it's always going to end up, you know, gills up in the tank if you put it in that salt water. It's just not going to make it. So that's how I see it.
All right, we've got Joe in the Bronx in New York now. Hi, Joseph. Go ahead.
Hey, George. How are you?
Good.
Yeah, I wanted to ask your guest if he thinks that these interdimensional beings could exist perhaps through a holographic matrix where they communicate with us spontaneously through senses and emotions.
Wow. Man, you know. your audience is so sophisticated.
Oh, they're the best.
They are at a whole different level from what I'm ready for. But because, yeah, of course, the answer is yes. Yeah, but then that brings us into a...
Are you saying you've been on talk shows where the guests, callers aren't as smart as mine?
Well, I don't want to come right out and say that. But I'll tell you, you've got nuclear scientists calling in here. That gets us into a discussion of holographic universe, which is something for another show. But, yeah, you know, the extra-dimensional beings are ones that, by definition, have access to other data streams that is beyond our capacity. So they can travel along a spectrum that we are unfamiliar with, and they can actually bring us into that spectrum so that we temporarily can sense and perceive things that maybe in our ordinary life we can't. So, yeah, and the holographic universe probably has a lot to do with that, because if we are in a holographic universe, then it becomes much easier to insert and exit certain other programs from that holographic reality. So, yeah, and I don't want to get off into a whole nother topic, but yeah, because that's a whole nother Pandora's box to be opened.
And John, take a minute to tell us about this other work you're working on. This one's fascinating. Voices, huh?
Oh, the Clear Hearers is that's going to be my next book coming up, and it is Tales of the Great Voice and what the source of the great voice, tales and concepts of the great voice and those who hear it. And that's basically about clairaudience, and it is about people who hear a voice of, like the young lady was saying before, your caller before, a voice of authority, comfort, guidance, and strength. A voice that helps people in their lives, that guides them, that takes care of them, and that sometimes avoids great catastrophe for them. And it's a book where I actually do an investigation that has gone for me years and years, where I have an encounter with the great voice, and then I speak with others who have had similar encounters. And I started an investigation that lasted over a decade, tracking down what the source of the great voice is.
Let's talk a little bit more about that, because that's fascinating. And as soon as that book's out, John, you come back on this program. But we're coming back in a moment with Final Calls with you on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. John D'Souza with us, the Extra Dimensionals. John, I'm getting so many emails, people congratulating us for putting on a former FBI guy.
Awesome.
They think you have probably had such a honing of investigative experience that you're perfect for this.
That's how I feel. You know, I do think that I bring a different investigative technique, a different point of view, and a different perspective, because especially in the paranormal, especially in ufology, there's a great deal of human drama that is used to distract people from what's really going on. And especially when in the mainstream presents these stories and these experiences, and all that stuff is just a distraction. What we need to drill down on always is exactly what went on between the alien visitors and the human subjects. What exactly went on between them, and what can that behavior tell us? You know, like the old FBI profilers. You know, they don't they look to build a character profile of who these people are, and that's what they focus on. That's what they do. We need to approach the alien visitors the same way. by just building a character profile, because that's going to tell you motivations, and that's going to tell you agendas, most importantly. And that's where we need to go with this. We need to leave behind, you know, are they real? Are they supernatural? Are they coming here from, you know, are they really supernatural, or are they just not true? You know, we need to leave that behind, and we need to move on to the next step, which is determining what they want and why they want it.
What pushes you in this field, John? Why do you keep doing what you do?
Because there are many people in paranormal that believe that no one else has experienced what they've gone through. Nobody else has been there, and nobody can understand what's happening with them. And it's so important for people to reach out to each other, to help each other, to advise each other, counsel each other in this area. It's so very important. And if you look through my books, that's one of the highest priorities, is making these things public and making these experiences, these cases, and the revelation of what's really going on between the lines, the subtext. It's so important to share this stuff, because we don't know how many people we could be helping by sharing these materials and sharing what's really going on beneath all the bluster and all the drama that we see in these cases.
All right, let's go back to the phones. We shall go to Cornelius in Louisiana. Hey, Cornelius. Hi.
Hey, George and Mr. DeSouza and all the callers and listeners, and my best friend, Mr. Tommy Danheiser.
Oh, yes. You guys are inseparable.
I'm the God, Guns, and Gold Man, the Bible, Bullets, and Beans Man, Mr. DeSouza. My question for you tonight, sir, I happen to be a Christian, but I believe these alien encounters are fallen angel, if not God, angel encounters, and they're trying to deceive us in this. And I wanted to ask you an FBI question first, and I'll let you answer that other one later. I was watching the news just a few minutes ago. Like, if a U.S. citizen is killed, like in Mexico at this nightclub.
At the nightclub,
FBI,
yeah.
Get involved or anything, or is that something for another agency? I'll take my answer off the air. God bless you, Mr. DeSouza. I plan on getting your book.
All right. Thank you, Cornelius. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, the FBI is already involved, because the FBI has offices, branches, right there in Mexico where this happened. So they can actually have a presence on the scene and start doing evidentiary work, start doing reconnaissance and gathering of evidence and local contacts over there for what really happened. So that's going on even right now. As soon as it happened, it was going on. And if they need any other resources, then they request it from the CONUS, from the main FBI offices that are close by over the border. So yeah, that goes on immediately. And the FBI now, after Louis Free, has major offices in just about every major country at this point. They're called LEGATs. They're affiliated offices, but they're pretty much FBI offices, and they're in the embassies of many major countries all around the world. And to answer his other question, it was about his being a Christian believer. And
are they demonic, for example?
Right. And, you know, I get that question a lot, and my answer is always the same. Yeah, whether they actually are demons themselves, sometimes their actions are demonic, yet there's also positive ones that give experiences that are peaceful, harmonious, loving. So, you know, there's and this caller wasn't like that, but there are sometimes highly religious people who say the entire phenomena is demonic. And I don't think that could possibly be true, because otherwise there wouldn't be any positive experiences around, and we see that there are. There are contacts with human beings that don't end in a forced abduction. Sometimes there are messages that are passed, and they can be messages of love and caring, like the young lady who talked to us before from Hawaii. and was contacted by some kind of extra-dimensional beings that gave her the messages, you know, to never fear, never fear. And that was the same, that was the second most popular message that Jesus Christ gave in the New Testament as well. Never fear, don't fear. And so, yeah, there's always, there's positive ones and there's negative ones, and that's a case-by-case basis.
Let's go to Mel in Mojave Desert, California, west of the Rockies, of course. Mel, you're up with us. Go ahead. Go ahead, Mel.
Yes. I wanted to ask Mr. D'Souza if he had ever heard of a case out in White Sands Missile Range in New Mexico that involved the disappearance of a Mr. Air Force Sergeant Jonathan P. Lovett.
Did he disappear by himself? Or?
No, he supposedly was abducted by a craft in the air, and they later found his body, and he was much in the state of, well, these cattle mutilation cases. This happened in 1956, allegedly.
Wow.
In March of 56.
Yes.
Yeah, I did not know about that case, but I definitely need to...
It was a three-day investigation, and then he showed up dead.
And he was with the soft tissue removed from the jaw and other places on his body?
Yeah, all over the place. And there was a major that was accused of murdering him, but the charges were dropped later. So they don't know, you know, they don't know what happened. It's a bizarre, bizarre case. And he's right. It happened at White Sands Missile Test Range in New Mexico, March.
I wonder if the pictures of that are publicly available, the pictures of the investigation.
I don't know. Now, that's a good question. I don't even know if they have pictures or not.
Because those pictures of the body would basically, they would really tell you a story there. That would be really amazing.
This is what they say, though. No sign of blood within his body or his system. The initial autopsy report confirms that the system, that's what they call his body, I guess, completely drained of blood. There was no vascular collapse due to death by bleeding.
It's parallel to animal mutilation.
Yeah, so-called. It is.
Animal-human mutilation. And one thing I'd like to say about that is that animal mutilations aren't mutilations. They are harvestings. And that would be a more accurate term for them, animal harvestings. And, you know, there's been few cases of human mutilations or harvestings, as the case may be, because of what they're doing again. It's a similar thing to the abductions. They are not really, you know, when you say the word mutilation, it makes it sound like some criminal just... decided to mash up the body for whatever reason, but that's not really an accurate word. These things are harvestings. They are collecting tissue. It is tissue of a certain type, tissue that is soft and spongy for the most part, and then they are collecting this tissue towards some kind of agenda. This stuff is all going into some kind of bank for later use, and they are going to be doing something with all this tissue, whether it's animal, human. And I believe all that stuff is going to eventually, as we reach the climax of this agenda, all that stuff is going to end up coming back to us in massive, tremendous ways. And that stuff is going to be used towards some kind of cloning or something that's beyond cloning, that hybrid agenda that we can't even understand how it works. And like I said, all that material eventually is going to be coming right back to Earth. And we'll see it.
Tom in the Bronx, welcome to the show. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, George. And hi.
Hey.
Guest. I like to say this, that before the British were in India, there's a story that came out of there that a UFO of a pretty gigantic size had crashed, and the people of India had taken a good portion of the framework of this vehicle, and they put it on the top of a church in India. They used it for a roof. And
wow.
It was a kind of a material that you couldn't burn, you couldn't do anything else with it. Had you ever heard of any story like that?
No, I have not, but it sounds very plausible. Do you have pictures of that?
No. It's somebody told me the story who was Indian himself from India, and or his family came from there, and they told him the story.
It sounds like the stories that we have from across the earth from people from certain sects and religions that end up getting an object from outer space and end up incorporating the object as a holy treasure into their religion and just set it in a sacred place, and then it becomes an object of worship. You know, people, when these things come in from other places and they can tell it's otherworldly, they have this impulse to incorporate it into their religiosity. And, you know, I have a feeling that it probably works for them. Gives them some kind of power somehow. And the question is how, you know. So I would love to see pictures of that temple or that that particular temple, if anybody has those, because that sounds really fascinating.
John, did you ever look at the case of Lonnie Zamora, the police officer in Socorro, New Mexico? That's an incredible case where he saw an egg-shaped object back off the side of the road in the desert with inhabitants running around next to it. And then they saw him, they jumped in it and took off. Off they went.
Yeah. You know, that story, when I hear about it and when I go over it, he said that he was a police officer who apparently, and it's funny when these stories happen to somebody who is so highly trusted and so regarded that everybody just springs into action and investigates it as a real thing, you know, and I guess Lonnie Zamora fell into that category because they treated this as a serious thing and looked into it top to bottom. But the strange thing is that he saw inside this vehicle, it just looked like regular humans to him. And before this thing took, if I'm remembering the correct case. And so it kind of lends credence to this whole alternate theory that a lot of people put stock in, that there are instances, maybe when we see that alien visitors may not be alien creatures at all. They may be just humans from the future. And that's a really interesting sort of branch to really look into. And when Lonnie Zamora was not the only one who saw just regular humans inside of a vehicle, but these guys just appeared very human, and the way they got nervous and just took off, it just gives it, like, lends it an area of like, yeah, these were just some humans just bumming around the deserts of New Mexico. And when they were discovered, they just panicked and took off. You know, those kind of sound like humans from the future. You know?
They sure do. Let's go to Mr. M. in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, first-time caller. Mr. M., hello, sir.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for taking my call, and how are you, gentlemen?
Wonderful. I hope you are, too.
Okay. I would like to briefly share two of three encounters I've experienced.
Give me one, because the clock is going to get us, Mr. M., so
okay.
Go ahead.
Well, let me tell you, these entities are very much real. I've encountered late 60s, early 70s, three of the grays. Two of them climbed in my bedroom window.
Wow. And what did they do? Did they take you? What happened?
Well, they did something to one of my family members. And they were speechless and very upset for about 2 days.
Wow.
Well, without getting into the specifics, I kind of read between the lines here. Why do they do things like this, John?
You know, it seems in everything that I've studied, everything I've seen, and it seems like grays are very limited in their duties and execution of those duties. And so they're usually sent for very specific purposes. And if they did that, I would have loved for him to be a little more explicit on what exactly they did. But if we're guessing,
you can imagine.
Yeah. I would say that That was their task for the day. That was their task. Going again, collection of human materials is the really stripped down agenda that goes on in all of these cases. I mean, I wouldn't say all, but in so many of these cases, whether you're talking abduction, contact, or others, it seems like that collection of human material just seems to be the ultimate point of all of these agendas. Sperm, ova, blood, human tissue, fetuses. I mean, it's just amazing how we keep coming back to that single point again and again.
And again and again. When is the other book, The Clear Hearers, coming out this year? What's the date?
3 months. It should be out. The Clear Hearers, True Tales and Concepts of Hearers of the Great Voice.
All right, my friend. Be well. John D'Souza, great book. This one is called The Extra Dimensionals, and it's a fascinating story about True Tales and Concepts of Alien Visitors. Make sure you're with us all week long. I'm back in L.A., and I get to see my staff, finally, after 2 months. Holidays went by fast, and this year, I think, is going to go by just as fast as last year. Oh, boy, here we go. Hang on. It's going to be one heck of a ride. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Greg Bishop, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.